Well, everybody, hate to come to you with this kind of news, but what a week for the Detroit Lions. I mean, the defense decimated by the Seahawks now loses two key members, and we just had to fire it up, man. Bang the Table Podcast. I'm your host, Doc Macaroon, made possible thanks to SI and Fan Nation. I can't believe that this is what's happened to the Detroit Lions. So I had to dial up my guy, Adam Badoon, host of the Adam Badoon Show. You can listen to it and find it on YouTube every morning, 9 to 11 a.m. Man, I'm bummed out. We're going to break it all down, what it means for the Lions, how the defense can recover from a loss this significant, and does this mean the Lions' playoff chances are already over? Adam, what the hell is going on? I mean, we all knew and joke around that the Lions are cursed, but what is going on? The sheer length of injuries that has taken place early in the season is overwhelming. It's staggering.
You know, Doug, I didn't think this was how we were going to talk again.
Right?
I didn't know this would be the occasion, but I mean, it's awful. But you know, my initial takeaway is I don't know. Like, I don't even know if the secondary was good. They were bailed out in Kansas City. All-time wide receiver performance in a bad way from Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, and company. Like, they were all open. They just had a ton of drops. And then you got a game against Seattle where you don't have a pass rush. Geno Smith looks like Dan Marino. And Tyler Lockett went from looking like he should be in a retirement home to looking like he probably should have been taken in people's fantasy leagues in the fourth, fifth round. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know how good this defense is. And no disrespect to C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I wish him well. But, you know, this isn't Sauce Gardner or Patrick Surtain or D.J. Reed. This is a playmaking secondary player who benefits from quality teammates around him. And that's something the Lions don't really have right now on defense. So did it ever really matter?
Man, it's real interesting to look at because you look at what he brought to the table in terms of, you know, the emotional leader of the team. I think that when you brought him, yeah, you obviously wanted what he could bring, you know, in regards to interceptions and pass breakups and things like that. But you also wanted kind of that swagger, that little bit of that juice that he brought to the table in terms of trying to rally this defense. But you said it. I think it's so tough in this NFL to play good defense that this loss is going to be. Look, we're going to talk about the impact, but look, man, just this is only week two, and look at this list. Josh Pascal, James Houston, and now we talked about C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Big V, Julian Aquara on IR. You're losing David Montgomery to a bruised thigh. Antoine Green, Khalil Dorsey, Taylor Decker. That list is unbelievable to start the year. And maybe you look at it and you say, if there's a silver lining, get all these injuries out of the way. But for C.J. Gardner-Johnson, it's not just something like with James Houston where he's going to miss maybe 6 to 8 weeks and can come back for a playoff push. This could mean that he misses the entire season. And you look at where this thing has gone. This could go south real quick, Adam. I mean, this was a season where people are excited. They looked at the NFC North and they said, this is the time. Everyone's kind of pinpointed year three with Dan Campbell and said, this is the time where not only do they want to just get to the playoffs and host a home playoff game, they want to win. And I think losing, and to what degree, losing C.J. Gardner-Johnson is not something that's going to really allow this football team, if they get to the playoffs, to succeed and play at a high level.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue. And, you know, every team has injuries in the NFL, and it's the coach's responsibility to make the most of what they have. I can feel bad for a few players and a few coaches, bad breaks, bad luck, but it's part of the NFL. And you know what? I don't mean to be that guy, but I swear to God, I hated it from day one, and I was chastised for it. The f***ing ski masks, and excuse my language, but the ski mask thing, like, karma. This is karma. This is such bad karma. You had a win of a decade in Kansas City against the defending Super Bowl champs. You decide that you're coming after what's yours and when you're the Lions. And now C.J. Gardner-Johnson out for the year. Multiple injuries to the offensive line, defensive front. Players out for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks at a time. And I never want to see another ski mask at Ford Field.
Man, it's listen, this is wild to think about, you know, and maybe, yeah, people will look at the ski mask thing and say, oh my gosh, you know, this was manufactured and doesn't really represent Detroit. And look at the craziness, you know, September weather was still nice. So I look at it, Adam.
Doc, I learned this the hard way a long time ago, 15 yeah. years ago. I was a freshman in high school. Fortson High School had one of the best high school football teams in the state. One of the best high school football teams in the state. They ran the table, undefeated. Everything went well. They got to the state semifinal. And the week leading up to the semifinal, the seniors and the juniors decided to pull out some stupid, terrible towel imitation. And everybody was hyped how they were going to beat Lake Orion. This time was different. Everything was great. And on the first play of the game, Fortson throws a pick six.
Wow.
Lake Orion wins by 40 points. I don't even remember the score. It was embarrassing. And the rest is history. I'm like a big believer in karma, and the whole ski mask thing just turned me off. It's not Detroit.
Right.
And you don't do that after one game. You do that after you win a division and a playoff game.
Too soon, right? Was it too soon? Did that impact what happened with the Lions against the Seahawks in your mind? Because, you know, you had a football team that is still delicate and fragile. They're a young team, and they were looking to build momentum off of defeating the Chiefs. Yet you got this individual who I thought as well was maybe, you know, championing this position in that locker room, but maybe should have done it more privately, because I think it did give Seattle a little bit more ammo internally.
You know, forget the ammo internally. Like, that's where identity matters. And when you allow a person who's on a one-year deal, by the way, just like Jamal Williams, like the idea that Jamal Williams was the leader of this team, when we all knew he was probably leaving at the end of the year on a one-year deal, it never made any sense. And the idea that Gardner Johnson was going to show up, they'd win one game, and totally change the mindset of this town, that's not how it works. And that's on coaching. It's on the coaches, especially the head coach, to have an identity. Never too high, never too low. The season, it's the NFL. There's always going to be peaks and valleys. And it came off disingenuous. It came off as not Detroit. And look, it's really unfortunate for CJ to go down with an injury after everything. But that loss is the epitome of what the Lions have been. And it's an accumulation of so many things. And it's been 3 years this way now under Dan Campbell. They're 2-15 in September and October. It just has to change. And I didn't think a ski mask run was the ticket to the Super Bowl. Sorry.
No. I think when you look at it from a player's perspective, you're looking at an identity. You're looking to kind of do something and build something within that defense, because it is something that is new, and, you know, trying to build that swagger, because it's something that you look at and you say, can something like that carry a football team when they're looking for just, you know, something, anything to gravitate towards to try and champion? I think you're right. Timing was wrong, and I think that it ended up backfiring and blowing up in a huge way.
I was going to ask you, you know, did you play high school football?
No, I never played football.
Okay, there was this stupid tradition that would happen every offseason, even if you were a school that won no games the year prior. You would do state champ push-ups at the end of every offseason practice. 10, 20, 30, 50, depending on the coach. Grueling push-ups at the end of a 2-3-4-hour workout where you would just scream state champs as if like you were ever even any fucking good. And you had no chance. You weren't even going to win two games that year, and you knew it. But you'd still scream out state champs like you had a fucking chance. Like that's to me, a ski mask mentality. It drove me fucking crazy.
Oh, man. Yeah, I understand. I look at it, and I say that, you know what? Show it on the field. And I think you're right. That Detroit's identity is grit. It's I think, something that maybe even Penei Sewell hinted at on Monday when he talked to the media. He's like, enough talking. Let's just handle business, and we do our talking on the field. And I think that's what, maybe in looking at it, that C.J. Gardner-Johnson, just in the way in which he conducted himself, just really kind of misaligned a little bit in regards to kind of what people thought and how it was going to go down. But, man, you don't want this, though, because I do think that it's going to be tough moving forward. Look at the next two games. You got the Falcons coming in that are playing a good brand of football, and then you got a short turnaround, and you got the Packers. What kind of impact does this have? You've watched football. You've seen the way in which teams can, you know, look what happened. The Lions were playing well, and Taylor Decker goes out, and, you know, and then once Big V goes down, Now you have Matt Nelson on the right side, and then the increased pressure on Goff results in a pick six, and the rhythm was completely thrown off in the game against the Seahawks. What kind of impact do you think this is going to have? Is this something that the Lions will need to rally around? Do you think that bringing in Tracy Walker is enough to kind of steady the ship for the next couple weeks?
The problem is, the issue is unknown, because we went into the last season 1-6 to start. It was one of historically the worst secondaries in all of football. They got their act together, a big part of it because of Aiden Hutchinson and James Houston. They improved. Things were better. They were giving up, I believe, 19 points a game towards the end of the stretch. Things were positive. And then you add all this free agent talent, but you don't even get 2 full weeks of them all together. So I don't even know if they've improved, Doc, and that's probably the biggest concern. So do I think they can fix it in 2-3 weeks? No. Are they going to have a very friendly matchup in terms of their secondary not getting exposed versus Atlanta? Yeah, Atlanta's a run-heavy team. Ritter can't throw the football. And if he does throw the football on the Lions, Aaron Glenn better not show up in Detroit the next morning.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing with this defense. Man, it's crazy when you look at everything going on. That was supposed to be the unit that was supposed to take the next step. And I was completely disappointed that you look at a football team that knows, and I just saw now online, the Lions are playing the Seahawks again next year at Ford Field in 2024. So this rivalry is going to continue for another year. You looked at, you had the extra couple days to prepare. The way in which Seattle has been owning you, you would have thought that the team would have emphasized, obviously getting to Geno Smith, doing whatever you can, especially knowing that the Seahawks were dealing with reserves and guys off the streets playing on the offensive line. And then right away, what do the Seahawks do? They march right down the field, nearly 8-minute drive, and they kill the momentum right away. And I just think that when you look at the Lions' defense, I think that right now it's teetering a little bit, and it could completely collapse when you look at confidence, when you look at if Ritter does, have a nice opening drive with Bijan Robinson or Kyle Pitts or the other tight end, Smith, that's having success. You could see this defense teeter and waver and really start to not perform well, because look, I mean, it takes time. You got a lot of new pieces. They're still having communication issues. And how disappointing is that when you see the team have disappointing communication issues and not be on point at home? It's loud. Yeah, that it's going to make you have these use of signals to kind of understand the calls, but that should be tightened up by now. So I just think that the injuries piling up is not going to be something that is just going to be managed that quickly. It impacted the Lions right away, and it could impact this. And look, man, difference between 9 and 10 wins could be that just one game that could cost them the opportunity to get to the playoffs. So it is crazy, and I think that Aaron Glenn needs to step it up and figure out the best way, because there's so many issues now. You try to plug one hole on the defensive line, another one opens up now in the back end, and that marriage together needs to work. And I just think that when you keep having these injuries, you're going to be counting on people that themselves are coming back from injury. So this defense is a major concern.
I just think it's very convenient. I just think it's very convenient, although it's warranted criticism, that Aaron Glenn is our focus. Because I'm looking at Dan Campbell, who after the game, by the way, in his post-game presser, said, yeah, you know what? We didn't want to give them the ball at the end. We didn't want to give their offense a chance to run it back down the field like they have all game. Mm-hmm. They were moving the ball well on us. Like, you can't say that and then go for it on 4th-and-2, 4th-and-4 at your own 45-yard line. Like, this is also something that has to change. Now that your defense is depleted and they're not operating at 100%, and I'm sorry, you don't have the 49ers or the Eagles defense where you can gung-ho, do whatever you want, and they'll bail you out, or the Cowboys defense. Like, Dan Campbell has to look in the mirror now and say, I need to approach games not to lose, but I need to do what's best for my defense, because I don't have to worry about my offense. My offense is going to give me points. It's going to keep me in games. But can I position my defense to get maybe an extra stop or two by using, a Pro Bowl punter who is one of the best punters in football that is very underutilized? I'm looking at Dan Campbell to wake up a little bit and mature as a coach. It's year three. I'm sick of questioning the same shit on a Monday after a Sunday game. Like, wake up. People believe in you. You have a talented roster. There's no excuses. Get it done. Button up. Be a grown adult and put your team in positions to win, not lose.
When you look at Dan Campbell, do you think that the use of analytics, because you look at it online and you say, well, it was like maybe 0.08% in favor of him making those decisions. You realize, okay, if you're going to be somebody that, you know, champions his aggressiveness when it goes well, like it did against the Chiefs, then is it really fair to criticize it? He's going to be aggressive.
But did it go well? They were bailed out by Kadarius Toney. They went for it on fourth and two instead of pinning back, again, not using their punter, when they actually had a defense that was at least playing better than they did against Seattle. Look, analytics, I can respect it, and I've said this on my show. I don't have to agree with Dan Campbell. I can respect his aggressiveness, but you can't be aggressive when the situation begs for you to be conservative. And then on the flip side, when the situation begs for you to be aggressive, you hide, you holster your weapon. You get shy in the moment. I don't like that. And that's probably been my biggest issue with him so far, is it's confusing. I'm not saying be predictable, but my goodness, have a philosophy that you stick to. It seems right now that he's just making up his mind when he feels like going for it and when he feels like he doesn't want to go for it. And I don't think that's the right way. You know, he can learn a lot from Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith, last week, the Falcons were driving fourth and one, I believe, fourth and two. They're in field goal range. They're down 24-22. If they don't get the fourth down, they probably lose that game. But you know what? They sat there and they said, let's go win the game. Let's get a first down, burn Green Bay's timeouts, give them 30, 40 seconds left with a rookie quarterback, essentially. And they did. And they brought up a creative play. They gave it to Bijan Robinson. He got the first down. And that was aggressive in the moment to win the game. Not aggressive because you feel like it and it's early enough where you can get away with it. So Dan's got a lot to learn still. He's not off the hook yet.
No, absolutely. I agree. And oh my gosh, as we're recording something when you get home to look at, Nick Chubb had a nasty leg-breaking injury. Oh, crazy. Everyone's looking at
it. No way.
Nick Chubb out, brother. It's severe. All the doctors are looking at it. Leg-breaking injury, graphic left knee multi-ligament dislocation type injury. All the doctors, David Chow's on it. So something's in the air, man. These injuries are catching up with a lot of these athletes.
This is why you don't pay running backs.
Yeah.
This is why you don't draft running backs.
Yeah. So,
ding, ding, ding.
So right into the next topic here, man. Jahmyr Gibbs versus Bijan Robinson. Now with, you know, like I said, you don't wish injury on anybody, but David Montgomery potentially being out with the thigh bruise now puts the spotlight squarely on the decision. You got Bijan Robinson coming off of a great game. Jahmyr Gibbs, obviously in prime time, hasn't kind of been utilized the way in which everybody thought. Ben Johnson's taking it slow. Similarly with Jack Campbell, their reps are not, and their utilization is not what you would think from a first-round draft selection. Now at Ford Field in front of everybody, you're going to have these two young running backs go head-to-head, and I think it's going to be great to see because we'll get some answers. I think Bijan Robinson is going to have a lot to prove, as does Jahmyr Gibbs, because I think he's going to want to avenge dropping the football and being a part of a miscommunication that ended up costing the Lions. I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to prove once and for all a little bit, give people an insight. Hey, did the Lions and Brad Holmes maybe reach on a player that, because if you wanted a running back, the day of the draft, I said my bold prediction was that they would take a running back, but I thought it would be Bijan Robinson based on the tape because I thought he was a bell cow running back. I thought he was a better talent, the better overall prospect, and I thought that he had projected to probably have maybe a better career. So I can't wait to see what happens this Sunday at Ford Field between those two. Do you have concerns about Gibbs and what you've seen so far early on?
It's not so much I have concern with Gibbs the player. I think we all see how explosive he can be. He was a great football player coming out of Alabama. The issue here is, you know, the Lions talked a lot all offseason about how they're going to use Jahmyr Gibbs in so many ways. Well, I don't think they know how to use him. And I think they're still trying to figure out how he works in the offense. And Sam Laporta has walked in seamlessly and everything is great. Jameson Williams, I have no hopes for. But when you look at Jahmyr Gibbs, it's a big question mark, not because he's not talented, but they don't want to run him in between the tackles. They don't want to line him up in the slot. Why the hell did you draft him 12th overall? Atlanta are winning games because of Bijan Robinson right now. He is arguably the best running back in the NFL behind Christian McCaffrey. They are winning games because of it. The Lions still don't know what to do with Jahmyr Gibbs, yet they took him at 12th. help me.
Yeah, understood. So I got to ask, being that you see things in a similar way as me, now with the loss, the Lions are 1-1. Do you say to yourself, look, you know, three techniques don't grow on trees. You saw what DeAndre Swift was able to do, 175 yards, had an opportunity to be used heavily. It was a contract year. You maybe could have kept him, drafted Jalen Carter, or you could have said to yourself, you look at Brad Holmes and his ability to, you know, evaluate high-end talent. You could have had George Pickens and, you know, Jordan Davis, or you could have had a more impactful defensive lineman. What do you need right now? Pressure. What does Jalen Carter bring? A high motor, high energy guy that can play along the defensive line, play three technique, and be a disruptor. Do you think that Brad Holmes may regret kind of this strategy of taking the players that are gritty and absolutely die for football over talent? Because I think it's starting to reveal itself when you're in these tight games and you look at the 49ers and they got high-end talent in McCaffrey and Samuel and a quarterback now that's emerging. And you look at these other teams and they got good, gritty players, but they also have multiple high-end guys that you can count on week in and week out. What are your thoughts like so far? Are there any cracks in the armor in regards to how this team has been built just based on the first couple games this year?
Well, let's be honest, and I love Brett Holmes, and I think you do as much as I do. I spent a lot of draft capital in the second and third rounds on defensive tackles, defensive ends who haven't paid out.
Yep.
Roderick Martin recently. That's sketchy at the moment. I don't want to talk about Jameson Williams because it'll just make my blood boil, so I'll move past that. But, you know, there's normal people like you, myself, and everybody that was covering the draft leading up, and you know, at least for me, I'll speak for myself. It was Kalijah Kancey. It was Christian Gonzalez. I was never a Jalen Carter guy, so I'm never really going to sit there and say they made the wrong decision unless this guy just becomes all pro, never has any off-the-field issues, and he's a consistent game changer. Then I'll eat my humble pie. But till then, right now, for me, it's Christian Gonzalez was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have used him. There are questions. I don't want to sit here and say it's over, but I'm sorry. When you draft a player at 12 and you are literally deficient on defense, the top five offense the year prior, it seems a bit arrogant. And for a team that hasn't won anything, they've only had one winning season with this coach, it seems arrogant. It seems like a luxury pick right now. And I hope that changes throughout the season. Sam Laporta looks good. Brian Branch, early promising, very good. We know Brad Holmes can find talent, but a running back at 12, even Bijan Robinson is on a carry count. They are not running him into the ground. They are using him situationally, and they are using him when needed, and they use him out in the slot, out of the backfield in multiple ways to win football games. The Lions don't do that with Jahmyr Gibbs. They're kind of just there. And that is what hurts me. Arthur Smith drafts a running back at 7, knowing he doesn't have a quarterback. I can live with that. The best running back, arguably the best offensive prospect in the entire draft. I'm okay with that. And they're 2-0 because of it. And they have a philosophy. With the Lions, it just seems like they're feeling themselves a bit, and it might bite them in the ass, man.
Okay. Enjoying my football conversation with Adam Badoon, host of the Adam Badoon Show. You can check it out on YouTube every single morning, 9 to 11. Got great takes about Detroit sports and nationally as well. Strong opinions, really entertaining, and now featuring great guests as well. One last thing. So can the Lions fans handle one more year? Because, look, in the end, you look at, you would have loved this year to be a year you get to the postseason. But, you know, early on, you're starting to kind of see signs that maybe the luck factor this year maybe has run out on the Detroit Lions. So you look at it and you say, okay, one more draft, one more free agency, you get another collection of 6 players that you think could contribute. Can this fan base wait one more year and really put all your eggs in the basket in 2024? Because then everybody else, you'll have a second year of Brian Branch, Amon-Ra St. Brown, really hungry for that next contract. Everybody kind of in that prime zone where they're hungry to play for their next contract. They're at that right spot. And you got that experience, but you know the challenge could be you could be losing your offensive coordinator. But I think that I'm not as bummed out about this year because in my mind, I put all my eggs in the basket of 2024. I figured the Lions this year, if they got to the postseason, I didn't care either way. As long as they got there, that if they even got blown out, it wouldn't be a big thing, because the Cowboys in 91 got blown out by the Lions in a major fashion, and they still went on and took that hunger and built something for the future. I think the Lions can have that potential, but I'm not certain the fans can wait, especially given the hype that we had for the Lions for the last 8 months. It kind of felt like the process sped up and everybody put all their eggs in this year's basket.
I'll answer the two-parter. Okay, the first one, let's focus on coaching. The second part will be about the players in the future. So can they wait till next year? It depends. Are they going to be a 5-12 football team this year? Are they going to be a 8-9, 7-10 football team this year, where Dan Campbell is continuing to make the same mistakes? And even further than that, is Robert Saleh going to get another year? If Arthur Smith doesn't win the division and they win 4 games this year, is he getting another year? Brandon Staley getting another year? These are coaches that were hired in the same class as Dan Campbell. The only successful one at the moment is Nick Sirianni. So, no, I'm a big believer in the 3-year NFL cycle. If you haven't figured it out in 3 years, barring catastrophic quarterback injuries, which the Lions haven't had, you got to go. And I'm looking at Brad Holmes and saying, you had an opportunity, you spent big in free agency, you went all in on the secondary, and you just totally went in the complete opposite direction strategically by improving an offense that was already one of the best in the league when Aaron Glenn probably wasn't a good enough coordinator anyways. And you look around the league, Kyle Shanahan always has a good defensive coordinator. And Sean McVay always has a good defensive coordinator. All the quality coaches, Andy Reid, whoever it is, they all have quality defensive coordinators. Yet Dan Campbell and his press game conferences and the Monday after are, we'll sit there and defend Aaron Glenn and sit there and defend the defense and that, you know, the defense was put in bad spots. Dude, whose fault is that? It's your fault. You fourth down, gung-ho, happy coach? Like, what are you doing? I think it depends. Like, how good are they this year and how bad? If they miss the playoffs, get out of my face. Get out of my face. I'd much rather keep Ben Johnson at that point. But even that's a risk, and it's always a risk. So there's that aspect, and then the player aspect. Is 2024 likely the mature year for them to, like, actually compete and maybe get to an NFC title game? Sure. But now you reach a point where Jared Goff likely would have been extended by then. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a top 12 wide receiver in the NFL. He's going to get top 10 money, likely. Penei Sewell is going to be one of the most highest-paid tackles in NFL history. Aiden Hutchinson, if he continues his development 2-3 years from now, will command a Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons type deal. So the money isn't going to be what it is now. And when you do extend Goff, that is something you also have to take into consideration. So if Dan Campbell isn't able to get just a little bit more out of this team than what they are at now, he won't be able to do it in the future. So that's my concern.
He is Adam Badoon. Man, I know we had to talk about breaking news on the injury front, but anytime talking football with you is fun. I look forward to joining you hopefully in the future on your show. It's going to take off and do big things. Where can everybody find you and definitely catch on the train of the Adam Badoon Show?
You can just find it on YouTube. We're streaming daily 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, live on the YouTube channels. We post our podcasts after the fact, currently only on Spotify. And, you know, just put out my content, all the clips on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, you name it, we're there. Just search the Adam Badoon Show. And I have you on actually tomorrow. So this is perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, my man. Great podcast. Always enjoy catching up. All right, we're going to sign off now on the latest edition of the Bang the Table podcast. Listen, don't act like Mel Tucker. We're getting off the phone now. Make sure you stay off the phone and stay out of trouble, okay? I know you're gonna take your wealth and riches and not squander it like the guy that used to run Michigan State. Always enjoy catching up with you. I look forward to many, many more conversations with my guy, host of the Adam Badoon Show. He is Adam Badoon. Thanks, everybody. I am the Doc, John Macaroon. Let's check in again next time.